are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What is this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It sounds very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-help radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industry's Child Care for Construction in partnership with Business Oregon, working to support those caring for children of journey workers in Oregon, even families and friends. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is Starbucks workers on strike. Our guests are Aspen Maxwell and Maggie Bolden of Starbucks Workers United. Aspen recently was a lead organizer at the Stuckey Starbucks in Hillsboro, fired for their union activity. And Maggie is a strike captain at the 126th and Division store. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Let's start with the news. Over 1,000 Starbucks baristas at 65 Starbucks shops across 40 cities kicked off an open-ended strike on Thursday, November 13th. The 13th was the company's Red Cup Day, a high-revenue annual event. Starbucks Workers United turned it into Red Cup Rebellion Day, shutting down most of the shops. Currently, 7 shops in the Portland metro area are out on strike, with plans to add more as the strike progresses. Starbucks, which has nearly 9,000 company-run locations in the United States, with over 300,000 employees, made $25 billion in profits last year and has a long history of union busting. But over 650 Starbucks shops and counting across the country have won union elections with the National Labor Relations Board since a Buffalo, New York Starbucks shop won their union election in December 2021. The speed of this unionization effort is breathtaking. The workers leading these organizing drives across the United States are largely shift supervisors, whose job is to coordinate the day-to-day running of the store, largely in their 20s. Much of the workforce is that age too, and many workers are LGBTQ+. Most are female. Starbucks professes progressive values, and many workers say they are organizing to hold the company to its word. Aspen and Maggie, why do you think this outbreak of organizing is happening at Starbucks, and how is it different from traditional union organizing campaigns?
That's a great question. I think one of the reasons why Starbucks workers are so motivated with their organizing is because a lot of us, myself included, you know, quit my career job and worked at Starbucks because I heard that it was the best job in retail where you could work part-time and get health benefits. And then you kind of quickly realize that that's not actually true. That's not the case. And that, like too many other service jobs, it's still not a living wage and it's still exploitative work. So I think we were kind of bamboozled by the company's marketing saying that this is the best job in retail, that we offer all these perks and benefits, only to find that they are still giving us pennies and not enough to live on.
Yeah, absolutely. Penny is not enough to live on. And I think on top of that, you know, they like to claim about the benefits and the access to benefits, but then they make it really hard to access those benefits and pretty much any way that they can find, whether it's preventing people from maintaining those hours on a consistent basis or holding it behind other access barriers that make it hard to be able to receive the care, like healthcare, that we want to receive.
So what is the national mood? And when I say that, I mean by the national mood of workers in general, and what is it about this particular workforce? You mentioned some things.
I think a huge part of it is that workers are tired of being exploited. They're fed up and they're ready for what's ours, right? We've been promised for a long time now from this company that they're committed to a contract, that they're committed to bargaining in good faith. And yet, you know, since Brian Nichol has taken this position as CEO, at every turn, we see him executing the exact opposite of those intentions. And workers are fed up. They're tired. They're ready for what's ours, and they're ready to seize the means of production again.
Yeah. I've only been in the workforce for 10 or 12 years, and already I feel that I've seen myself and my peers grow so tired and weary of, like, the wealth gap widening and, you know, working so much and being like, how can I never get ahead? How is it that even after all this time, I still don't have enough money to, like, save for, I don't know, things that come up, to put food on my table, to be able to, you know, have things that let us live in dignity. And so I think that's, you know, rising with people my age and, of course, older as well.
Speaking to this particular workforce, I think it's really interesting to see, like, what it is. You know, there's nothing about this workforce that is shy of fighting. You know, we're talking about a largely queer, a largely women or female, a largely POC-based group of, like, comrades and cohorts. And that's, these fights aren't new to any of us. We're used to it, and we fight for so much in our daily lives. And here we are fighting for workers' rights, too.
Why is the struggle of Starbucks workers so important to the rebirth and growth of the labor movement?
That's a great question. I think that Starbucks has been the face for happy consumerism for a long time, definitely as long as I've been alive. People have kind of unquestionably loved Starbucks and said, hey, you know, it's a huge chain, but I like the coffee they make, and I've heard that they treat their workers well. So I think this moment of Starbucks, like, having the name recognition, the brand recognition, and then also I think that honestly lends itself pretty well to our union effort, because people know about Starbucks. Anywhere I go and I tell them I work at Starbucks, people know what that means. And when I say that they're violating the law, they're not paying us fairly, everyone's like, wait, that's not what I have heard of Starbucks through the years. That's not what I have known. And so I think in that way, Starbucks having this labor uprising has really kind of become the face of the labor movement in the last few years, and really helped lend itself to our cause and to our awareness.
We've seen, I think, for so long, a lot of fast food industry, and Starbucks hates to call itself fast food, but as we've seen, there's been this huge shift from cafe culture, stay and welcome, third space, to, no, it really is fast food when you're seeing window times of 30 seconds and trying to get these things done in this super quick environment. It is fast food now. And for so long, we've seen, I think, sometimes the labor movement dismiss fast food as a viable option to unionize the workers and to take back power in the workplace. And that's really not the case. We're seeing with Starbucks workers, with our union, a real drive to create this change. And when we have this contract, when we actually put our feet to the ground and we're able to enforce it, I think we're going to see a huge shift. And we're already seeing part of it in this inspiration of other industries, other fast food chains also wanting to push to take back power in their workplaces and unionize.
Yeah, if I could just weigh in here as an oldster who's been in this labor movement for 50 years, you know, it used to be that the face of the labor movement was white guys in manufacturing, and it's been, the number of strikes has just gone way down, and the number of union members has gone way down over the last few decades. And all of a sudden, there's this strike wave, and Starbucks workers are like, we ain't gonna take it anymore, and getting out there and striking and striking and striking. And then it's, you know, it's all these young, fed up people, and it's, that's my assessment that that's really the future of our labor movement. So how did the conditions of the pandemic contribute to this upsurge of organizing?
I personally did not work at Starbucks during the pandemic. I don't know if you did, Aspen, mm-hmm. so I can let you speak to that if so. But just hearing from a lot of my coworkers that the conditions that they had to work in during the pandemic radicalized a lot of them. And we're like, okay, it's no longer just that I, you know, I'm not making a living wage knowing that I work in service, but like no one should have to work in an environment that is unsafe for a company that is willing to put its workers' bodies and lives on the line for profit. And it was just a really explicit show of profit before people. And that, you know, that radicalized a lot of people in my store included, that they were like, okay, from now on out, I will do whatever it takes because I'm not willing to do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about a company that saw record-breaking sales during the course of a pandemic and less workers in the workforce during that time. They deemed workers essential and Starbucks as an essential job, you know, to provide coffee to nurses and teachers. And they absolutely exploited the workers. They did not put their safety first. You know, we saw a mask mandate that wasn't enforced, that didn't matter. Customers not being held to the safety standards that were in place to protect the workers. And yeah, it was a clear showing and display from the company that they don't really care about the lives of workers. They care about the money, they care about the profit. And I think, yeah, it just continued to radicalize the workforce and really show people what their values truly are.
What are the main complaints and demands of Starbucks workers?
There are kind of two branches of our complaints right now, especially with the ongoing strike. First and foremost, Starbucks has over 700 outstanding ULPs, unfair labor practice charges, filed by their employees that need to be resolved, either settled out of court or taken to court. And as you know, Starbucks is one of the largest labor law violators in our country today. So they need to be held to account for that. Secondly, we are like 90% of the way done with our first union contract that we have been, I mean, bargaining for over 2 years, and then, you know, even just waiting for about 4 years. So we're so close to finishing that fair contract. The company is stalling out on fair wages and on safe and secure staffing. So kind of the two pieces there, the contract and then the ULPs being resolved, are what we're demanding an immediate end to.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that's really it. The staffing and scheduling and resolution to the ULPs, it's really disgusting to think that the difference between our positions at this point is less than a single day's worth of Starbucks sales, and they're unwilling at this point. You know, we've had plenty of opportunity to see them come to the table, and they are refusing over what? A single day's worth of sales.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. You're listening to Starbucks Workers on Strike with guests Starbucks workers Aspen Maxwell and Maggie Bolden. If you like this, if you find it informative, please consider donating to our non-corporate, community-sponsored, and listener-supported. Go to our site, kboo.fm, and make a donation. So what, I mean, you said a little bit about the response of Starbucks management to this national wave of organizing, but if you could say a little bit more about that. I mean, now Starbucks has a reputation as the most vicious, brutal union buster out there. And in your particular stores, what kinds of responses have management had to your organizing?
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to see the way that management responds sometimes. I think that in a way, our store managers day to day are also just a part of the exploitation in the system. And I think in a lot of other ways, they do embolden and empower the decisions that that we're seeing from higher ups, you know, from higher directions in the company. Whether it's asking workers if they intend to be on strike, which we know is illegal, or whether it's playing favoritism over workers and how they're choosing to administer write-ups and discipline and dress code, seeing workers written up for the wrong shade of black, or for having piercings that they were hired on with because of the change of dress code. Things like this. Obviously, you know, in my case, I was fired for using sidewalk chalk and writing pro-union messages off the clock after hours and protected union activity, sidewalk chalk. They wanted to call it vandalism, vulgar graffiti, and fired me for egregious misconduct. And I don't think all that to say, it's not stopping us, right? If anything, it continues to fuel a fire. We know that the goal of their actions is to try and quiet things. And the reality is, for me at least, it only continues to fuel my fire.
Yeah, for the folks in my store, the last 5 days, we have seen Starbucks do what they do best, which is continue to violate the law. And, you know, whether that's like our manager leaving kind of ominous or threatening voicemails to people, spreading disinformation, saying that these absences are unexcused and that they're, you know, counted toward marks on their, you know, employee record, that they could be disciplined for this. We know that that's not true. And the only weapon that Starbucks really has at this time, because we're withholding our labor, is kind of like empty threats and misinformation. That's all that they've got going on. And, you know, Aspen, I appreciate what you said about our managers are also exploited workers, and yet they are paid just enough to think that they're not and to do the bidding on behalf of the corporation. You know, they're not the ones that are making millions and millions of dollars every year. They are also working class people, but they have been kind of brainwashed by this company and by making a livable wage to think that they can, you know, exploit us and that they will do those things on behalf of the company. So, yeah, I've been disappointed but not surprised that the company has gone back to their one and only tool.
I think circling back real quick, the role of community support that we've seen has been really vital to, you know, whether it's showing up to the picket lines and groups. You know, we see DSA out on the line with us. We see PAT, other unions in our area, out supporting us and really showing workers that it's beyond just us in our workplaces, that other people are there too. But then also, again, in my case, being fired, showing up, having the community there, demanding our reinstatement and saying that we're not going to back down until we see workers back in their workplace or until we see workers have a first contract. It's huge because we're here serving our community. We're here serving our customers. We want to do right by them. And for them to stand up and say, we want what's right for you too, it really does go a long way. We're a community.
How have you and your coworkers resisted management's union busting tactics?
Yeah, I think that our tactics kind of vary in a couple of different ways, whether it's on a store level basis, getting together with your comrades, deciding what those priority issues are, marching on our boss and telling him this is unacceptable, and really making sure that our workers know what to look out for. Hey, you know, after we have this, we can probably expect the manager to be upset for a couple of days. So make sure that you're taking notes if she's being passive aggressive or if she's treating you differently, and making sure that they're aware going into that. And still committing to it because we want to see these changes and we know that they're going to have a response, but that shouldn't keep us from fighting for it. Or like I said before, using chalk to show our managers like, hey, it's time for our contract, or going on strike. All of these different things are ways for us to like kind of push back. We'll document a lot of the times if our managers are doing shady things. We'll record our marches on the boss so that sometimes it's really interesting to see them just walk away. A complete refusal to listen to their workers, you know, and make sure that they're being held accountable and that people are seeing, like, look, there's a problem here. It's not just workers complaining, but, like, there's a refusal to listen to.
I think a really lovely outcome for the folks at my store specifically has been resisting through being together. And, you know, I have really enjoyed all my coworkers up until now, but going on strike and even just planning for the strike itself has really brought us together in a way that kind of insulates us from the union busting, right? So when one person gets kind of a scary voicemail from our boss, they send it in the group text and they're like, hey, you know, so-and-so just told me this. Is this true? And then other people can be like, oh, she called me also. Oh, she told me this. You know, I talked to our organizer. I talked to our staffer and like, here's what's going on. That's not true. And, you know, that kind of group share of information and emotion of like, I'm feeling kind of afraid or I'm feeling really riled up and, you know, relying on each other to kind of regulate in that way has been really helpful. And I feel like really solidifying us together as united in our cause.
So you're on strike now, but you've been on strike here in the Portland area a number of times, a number of different stores. So tell our listeners a little bit about those strikes, why they happened and how people responded to them, how people felt about them.
Yeah. Our most recent store walkout for my store was when the company changed the dress code kind of across the board without bargaining with the union, which is something that they're required to do. So that happened over the summer. I believe it was June or July. And our store did just a work stoppage and a one day walkout. So our boss is supposed to be there that day so we could confront her, like Aspen said, kind of read her what was going on. Tell her our demands and then walk out. But she did not show up. She rescheduled herself. So we sent her an email. We told all the customers, hey, this is what's going on. We're stopping work for today and we're walking out because we don't agree to this unilateral change. This is actually illegal for Starbucks to do in the first place without bargaining with us. And we're not going to let them keep doing that without consequence. So that was my most recent experience in the Portland area. And, you know, a few people were like, well, what's stopping work for one day going to do? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not trying to take down the whole company today, but they do need to know that there are consequences to their actions and that we're not okay with that. And, you know, if there is for every action, we can have a reaction to it. And, you know, all those kind of culminated in this longer strike that we're doing. But that was, you know, kind of the most recent example for us.
Yeah, I think we've seen a number of strikes, whether it's for individual store issues or larger scale issues as well. We saw the strike before Christmas last year when the company refused to give us a legitimate, serious offer in economics. You know, we got to that nitty-gritty portion and they wanted to offer us a 1% increase, and clearly that's not going to cut it to ever think that workers were going to accept a 1% offer is just ludicrous. So it's just really mind-blowing. So we ended up leaving bargaining because of that, and we wanted Starbucks to give us a legitimate offer, and we went on a 5-day strike before Christmas, and that's when we saw that. Prior to that, you know, we've had several other strikes. We had our strike with Pride, which we all took to the streets during Pride Month and went on strike over changes to our Pride decorations, no longer being able to put up decor in store around Pride Month, changes to which flags we were able to put up, Pride flags. And there's still strict codes around which flags are and are not acceptable for Pride to be having in your stores, right? And, you know, that's one of the first strikes that we've seen for LGBT issues in the workplace. And I am so proud to have been a part of that.
What does your t-shirt say? Aspen.
Be gay and organize.
I've seen so many organizers and union members in particular take up that slogan after the Starbucks workers. So it's really an inspiration. You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what's been the role of community support in giving workers confidence and pushing back?
Yeah, this strike currently would not be possible at the scale it is without our supporters and our allies. Specifically, the DSA has been such a huge support for us with fundraising and with meals and with just truly showing up to the picket line like
What's the DSA?
Oh, sorry. The Democratic Socialists of America.
Thank you.
Have been huge allies for us, you know, showing up to the picket line and fundraising and giving us meals and really supporting workers and even just offering encouragement, like, this is possible, you can do this, your community is behind you, and also other leaders as well. We know that SEIU, the Service Employees International United, is behind us as well. We have a lot of other allies that are just asking what they can do to help us, and a lot of that is just showing up on the picket.
So tell us, I'm sorry, Aspen, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I think it's really incredible seeing the community support here, because at the end of the day, like, taking on a company this massive, taking on Starbucks, this behemoth, Brian Nichol, right, the embodiment of oligarchy and corporate greed and all of these things, like, we're standing up to much more than just, like, we're standing up for more than just pennies on the dollar. We're fighting for more than just workers' rights. We're fighting in a way to take back our country in the face of fascism. And like, having our community show up, having our community around us and support, and building that network and those, that camaraderie and that solidarity with each other, that's how we're building a movement, how we're going to build and see things expand more so that we can actually start to see physical change in the world around us. Like, that's the role of community here, is banding together and like showing each other solidarity in this fight.
How can our listeners support your strike and stay informed about Starbucks Workers United?
So one thing for sure, if you haven't signed our pledge, one, don't cross the picket line. Stop shopping at Starbucks this holiday season. Boycott Starbucks until workers have their contract, right? Pick another coffee shop. Make your coffee at home. Go to nocontractnocoffee.org. Sign our pledge. Find a picket line near you. Come out and join us on the picket line if you're around. And if you have a couple of extra dollars to throw into our hardship fund, that would be incredible too. tinyurl.com/SBWU Oregon.
Yeah, well said. If you want to stay informed, follow SB Workers United on Instagram, and also find your local SB Workers United Instagram. For Portland, there's SBWUPDX.
Great. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We've been talking with Aspen Maxwell and Maggie Bolden of Starbucks Workers United. I'm Jamie Partridge here with my co-host Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Portland. Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Make sure to tune in on Wednesday, November 26th from 6 to 7 p.m. to vote for the president of the Youth Collective. We want this to be